Nose that grows. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're climbing the rungs of cinematic connections. Each week we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. Last week we watched Chinatown. This week, due to a connection of LA detectives, we are talking about The Nice Guys from 2016. I'm Zach Brooks. For the 213th time, I'm joined by
Nice Guy Brendan.
Nice Guy Brendan, back again.
And Zach, do you still have a nickname for me of you don't always have to be Nice Guy Brendan? And I think that has stuck over the years. Do you remember, did that nickname predate this movie or postdate this movie?
Oh, it has nothing to do with this movie.
I know, but did it predate or postdate? I'm curious.
I think it predated. I've called you Nice Guy Brendan for a long time. Because you are a nice guy. You're always helping somebody out. And you are here to help me out. To talk about The Nice Guys, which we were revisiting. Then at the end of the episode, we'll decide on our next movie based on suggestions sent in by you, the listeners, and us, your hosts. We'll be spoiling The Nice Guys, so if you haven't watched it yet, it is on Netflix right now, streaming. Mm-hmm. But if you want to skip ahead, here we're going to be watching next week. Timestamp is in the description of this podcast to jump ahead. But of course, we always suggest that you pause the podcast, go watch the movie, come back and listen to our discussion. And as always, submit your feedback, ratings, questions, comments at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, themovieladder@gmail.com, and The Movie Ladder on Letterboxd. All right. Brendan, I think that's the first time since I've, like, changed up the intro that I actually made it all the way through the intro without, like, skipping stuff.
Now you've jinxed it, and next week you're going to forget, like, everything that you learned today. But, yes. You know, so goes the podcasting business, you know?
Yeah. Well, we are we're just two guys who have been stuck together on this mission of talking about movies every week that connect to the movie from the previous week's podcast.
Indeed. If only Megan the Librarian was back this week to keep us in line like little Holly does in this film Gosling and to Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe.
Yes. So does that make Megan one of our daughters? If one of us is Holland March and the other one is Jackson Healy?
I'm not going to go that far down the rabbit hole with this metaphor, Zach.
Yeah. All right. Well, which is which? Am I Jackson?
I'm certainly the Ryan Gosling, and you're certainly the Russell Crowe. Yes. All right.
I don't think I've ever heard you scream quite like Ryan Gosling, though.
No, but I mean, I am the type of person that would have a mishap with a bathroom door. So there you go.
Yes, among other things. Nice. Well, The Nice Guys, here to watch it. I have not seen it since theaters. How about you, Brendan?
Yeah, this is the first time I have revisited this film since theaters. I went on quite the trek trying to figure out when exactly I saw this movie because I thought that I had found in my email the receipt of going to see this movie on my birthday, the weekend it was released, May 21st, 2016. However, Zach, it turns out that ticket that I found in my email had to be refunded. Because there was a fire alarm when I went to go see this movie, and they refunded my ticket. And I believe that is that resulted in you and I going the following weekend, Memorial Day weekend, to go see this movie
together. Fun. Yeah, this was in the pre-Letterbox days, so we don't quite have it all broken out in terms of like when we saw these movies like we do now. Now I can look back over the last, you know, since like 2018, 2019, like I can tell you the date I saw every movie because it's like I have that. That lovely Letterboxd diary.
Yeah, I tried to log in on Letterboxd until I realized how wrong I was about the exact date I saw it, and I had to delete the whole post. So there you go.
I appreciate your commitment to having accurate stats. Accuracy, for your
yes.
Movie watching.
I wanted accurate stats since I could not provide them. But yeah, this was a movie I remember being very excited about when it came out. I love the two leads, and I am a big Shane Black fan as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Nice. Well, we're going to talk all about it. But first, you want to talk about the best thing you watched this week?
Speaking of mishaps at the movie theater, this weekend luckily was not a major mishap, but it was an interesting choice. I Friday night decided to do a double feature at the Alamo Draft House of American Fiction and Zone of Interest, the final two Oscar nominated Best Picture films that I had not seen. American Fiction was a packed house with a roaring crowd that was all having just as good a time as I did. I really, really loved this film, especially the lead performance from Jeffrey Wright and the supporting performance from Sterling K. Brown. There's a lot of the interior plot of this film, the sort of background plot of this film that really hit home for me, with a lot of the family dynamics between everything Jeffrey Wright is dealing with his brother and with his mother, who is ailing. And it just there's a lot that really hit home for me with that plot. And I really loved how that plot was layered into the more fantastical and easy to sell to an audience plot of this film. And I really enjoyed the meta level of that, that we have to have this ridiculous plot in order to sell the quieter family drama that's underneath the big shiny plot. And so I thought that for a first effort at directing a film, Cord Jefferson did a really fantastic job. Cord Jefferson, who, you know, prolific TV writer and director, this is his first feature film, and I think he just, I want to see what he does next. I think he absolutely.
What has he written? What has he written for TV? Because I only know that he's, I think he wrote for The Ringer for a while, but I don't know what he wrote in terms of.
Yeah, a bunch of different HBO shows. And now my mind is drawing a blank. But
I put you on the spot.
Yeah, I believe he was in the writer's room for True Detective and season one and a couple other big HBO shows. He's also Watchmen. That was the one I was thinking of. Yes.
Watchmen, Master of None, and The Good Place are the there three that he's written.
Yeah. He's out
of. Oh, and Station 11 as well.
Station 11 was the other one. Yeah. That's which I absolutely adored. And then I stuck around for an 11 p.m. showing of The Zone of Interest. I was the only person in theater. I ordered one beverage, and it lasted the entire length of the movie because I was, like, trying not to move too much or, like, make any noise. Because it
even was, though you were the only person in the theater.
It was so immersive, Zach, Zone of Interest.
I saw it. I know.
I know. I mean, I said this in my Letterboxd review. I actually kind of wish that there had just been no subtitles so that I wasn't trying to read subtitles and could have been even further immersed in just the visuals and sound of the film. Like, even if I didn't understand the dialogue, I would have been fine. You know what I mean?
Zone of Interest was not the best thing I watched this week, but it definitely was a very effective and haunting movie experience.
Exactly. Yes.
And it's one of those where usually I can get behind watching movies that are tough to watch and disturbing. And this was just like on a completely different level for me where it, it's a testament to the film, how effective it was,
for sure.
But I just sat there watching it and I was like, why am I being put through this?
And
I don't usually feel that way with movies.
Yeah. The level to which it hit me, like there are very few movies that I've seen that I allow myself to see that hit me on the level that this one did. And I was sort of prepared for that going in to a certain degree. And came away like, this was a lot like the same way I felt after seeing Come and See for Criterion.
If we ever did Zone of Interest, which I do not think we will ever do Zone of Interest on this podcast, Come and See would be the like number one suggestion off of that.
It might get the Letterboxd point too.
It might.
Both very highly effective films. And then sort of the same way I felt about Hereditary as well, where I was like, haunted in a different, in a much different way, but haunted, you know. It was a great night at the movies. It was kind of funny. This is where the mishap was. By the time I left the theater, I had missed the last train back to DC from Virginia, And so I missed the train and I had to call an Uber, and that was my big misstep for the evening. But well worth it.
You earned it.
Missing that train. Yep.
Yeah, you had a hard fought night, so you earned it.
We had a lot of fun. It was What about you? What was the best thing you watched?
Oh, I had this ready and then I lost it. I'm also catching up on Oscar nominees. I watched three of them this week, Best Picture nominees. And so the best one I watched was Anatomy of a Fall, which I just think is like such a well-made courtroom and marriage, just drama, I guess is the word, you know, I don't know if that's super descriptive, but it is about a man who falls and the trial of what happened to him, to try to figure out what happened to him and why, what happened to him. So, I have not seen Anatomy of a Murder. I'm excited to check that out, even though just because they share a similar title, I have no idea if they share anything else except like being court-based and having the same title. But this, I just thought Anatomy of a Fall did such a good job of giving you lots of different perspectives and letting you really make up your own mind, where, you know, some of these court movies, you know, I think of like the Primal Fear is the one that like comes to mind, where it's like, they let you make up your own mind and then they tell you what happened.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Or A Time to Kill, you know, like Few Good Men. Like Anatomy of Fall, it lets you decide what you think. And there was one moment in the film early on where my mind was made up which way I felt. And no matter what was told to me, my mind never changed because of like my conception of like what I saw on screen. And if anybody wants to know, they can ask me separately, but I'm not going to say it on the podcast. But if we ever do Anatomy of a Fall on the podcast, I will reveal it then. Maybe it'll change on a second watch.
Which Sandra Hüller performance, because we should say she's in both Zone of Interest and Anatomy of a Fall. Did you watch Anatomy of a Fall first or Zone of Interest first?
Anatomy of a Fall I watched on the Friday.
Okay, because I was going to ask if you had watched Zone of Interest first, I would have been wondered if your portrait of Sandra Hüller was at all influenced by your recent viewing of Zone of Interest.
No, I didn't even realize that was her in Zone of Interest. I was so immersed in the world of Zone of Interest, I didn't see like actors in those roles. They really were like the characters they were playing. So maybe that's a better performance by her, but I did not even realize that was her until after. Yeah. I was like, oh, right, I forgot she's in both of these movies. Mm-hmm. So I thought Anatomy of a Fall was like, and it was just so gripping too. Like I was completely transfixed to the screen the whole time. Mm-hmm. I think like right when it started, I texted you and I said, wait, this movie's in English? Because I thought it was going to be in French the whole time. And then that was the last thing that I looked at my phone until the movie was over. And I was just like, I like could not look away when I was
watching. And I'm sitting there watching John Wick 4 and you're like, okay, I need to talk about this movie. I'm like,
I did ask Brendan and you listeners were almost treated to an Anatomy of a Fall, like
bonus pod.
Cause I just was like, I have so many thoughts when the movie ended. I can't get them all out, but I was like, sorry, I had like, so many thoughts. I was like, we should just hop on a Skype right now and talk for like 20 minutes about this movie.
Yeah. Unfortunately I still had an hour and a half left of John Wick 4 and Donnie Yen would not be denied this weekend for me. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, maybe someday we do Anatomy of a Fall. Yes. On this podcast.
Absolutely.
With ladders and falling don't always go together. So
one of my favorite movies of the year as well, Anatomy of a Fall. Yeah. Well earned Oscar nomination for Best Picture.
Do you have a favorite, like of the movies, do you have a favorite Best Picture nominee? Not that which one do you think you will win, but what is your top ranked?
That's a great question. I don't even have my Letterboxd in front of me. I believe that I recently, after talking to you about it on Friday, actually bumped Anatomy of a Fall up two slots to my number two movie of the year. I think Theater Camp is still number one just because it's my favorite movie of the year, but that's not a Best Picture nominee. Theater Camp snubbed for Best Picture.
Now, my favorite Best Picture nominee is Poor Things. I just thought Poor Things was like so unique. And then I have Oppenheimer very high on my list too, but my list will be posted. My list of Best Picture nominees will be posted to Letterboxd once I see American Fiction, which I'm not sure when I will be seeing that, but hopefully sometime soon. All right. Well, Nice Guys was not nominated for Best Picture. Was it nominated for anything?
Not really, no.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to talk about it. As we said, first time that both of us are revisiting that since 2016, probably about May, late May of 2016 when this movie came out. It is the story of two detectives who are kind of odd couple paired together.
Yes.
To investigate a missing girl. So, you know, we're going back to looking for the missing girl for the third week in a row. After Chinatown and Devil in Blue Dress. This is a period piece as well. This takes place in the late 1970s. We are
1977, the year of Jaws 2 and Star Wars.
Yes.
I clocked that Jaws 2 billboard, my friend. I did.
Yeah, Jaws 2 and Airport 77.
Airport
as well.
77, yes.
Yes. Both on my honorable mentions list.
I should double back. The AARP Annual Movie for Grownups Award. This movie was nominated for Best Buddy Picture at the AARP Awards.
So the AARP, oh man, that makes me, these guys aren't that old. I mean, Russell Crowe is getting up there a little bit, but so starring Russell Crowe, Ryan Gosling. We also have Anjuri Rice, who Brennan, you pointed out, is that's the girl from the new Spider-Man movies.
Yes, Betsy Brandt. She later dates Peter Parker's best friend in some of the other movies. And
she plays Katie in the new Mean Girls as well. She's the lead.
Okay, awesome. I might check it out for her then, because I think she's really fantastic in those Spider-Man movies, and I think she's really good in this. Like, I think she really helps hold the two leads together in a really good way. Like, and give,
she's that plucky child character.
Yes, she's the plucky child in this. The precocious youngster who's way too smart for her age. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also Margaret Qualley, who we've seen on this podcast back in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Also, she did show up in Poor Things as well just bring Poor Things back to this. And she is do you know who she's the daughter of?
I knew this when we did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I don't remember anymore. Ethan Hawke.
She's the daughter of Annie McDowell.
Annie McDowell. Okay.
Another Nepo baby in this as well. We had Jack Kilmer, Kilmer's son. He plays Chet.
Freaking Chet.
Got a couple Nepo babies in this movie.
Yes. Jack Kilmer, very good in his own right with directing the documentary about his father called Val.
He directed Val?
I think he directed Val.
Yeah. Oh wow. I saw he was in it. I didn't realize he directed it. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, he plays himself. He didn't direct it, but he's the narrator of
He plays himself and the voice of his father. That's what it is. Okay.
Self and narrator is what he's credited as. All right. Well, what did you think revisiting Nice Guys?
I thought it was a really fun revisit. I mean, this is sort of we might see this in some of the reviews for this film from our listeners. This is one of those movies that I think is sort of like one of those, this is one for us dudes movies. Like, this is sort of like a hang out with the dudes and watch a movie. Like, watch in porno. The same, you know, I think that this is just a really fun nonsense buddy cop movie. I do think that there are, you know, in the vein of like your Bad Boys or your or your other guys, movies that might come up later where you're not supposed to be taking it super seriously. My only issue with that is that I feel like the tone of this film isn't consistent with the absurdity that is set up in the beginning with some of the over the top humor, where by the end there are actual like dramatic stakes and people are dying and getting thrown out windows and like actually getting thrown off of roofs and smashing their heads on the ground and dying, like straight up dying. So this movie is sort of playing fast and loose with the tone in a way that I'm not sure is, because it's taking all of those deaths seriously in a way that I don't feel like the characters are, you know what I mean?
The scene towards the end where Amelia gets killed.
Yeah.
Even though I'd seen this movie before, that still shocked me that it was like, she's actually dead. Like she goes running. And like, when she runs out of the house, I'm just like, no, just stay. Like, they have your best interest at heart. Like, you don't need to run right now. And she still runs away. And then the car pulls up behind the, what is the like the serial
John
killer
Boy guy.
John Boy. Yeah. he shows up, he pulls up next to her.
Yeah,
and you're just like, oh no. And then she's on the ground, and it's not like they don't cheat out on the death, right? It's not like one of these where she gets shot, but she's still alive, and they're able to revive her at the hospital. Like, no, she's killed at the end of this movie.
The same with the Keith David character, the same with Blueface. Like, everybody gets straight up murdered in this movie.
I love that name, Blueface.
I like the Blueface character. Yeah.
Like, I think that's such a fun throwback to 40s gangster films, like the Dick Tracy type character, that his name is Blueface. Why is his name Blueface? Because he opened one of those money exploding things from a bank that explodes.
Now,
especially in the first half of this movie, had so much fun watching it.
Yeah.
I was sitting by myself laughing like 3 or 4 times just to myself. At things like the first point that I laughed really hard was when Holland goes to break open the window and he's just like, okay, and he just punches it, and like, if your hand has ever gone through glass, it's just like, there's no safe way to do that and not cut up your entire arm as you're going in and out, and he does that, and it's just like, he's like, oh, that's a lot of blood, and it's goofy, but I think to talk about tone, I think that sets the tone for at least his character and how slapstick his character is in this movie and how bumbling he is.
I agree. Yeah, especially when he's like constantly looking into falling into the right places is a really, really funny bit. And then he has a lot of really good jokes as far as, as far as like his one-liners and his malapropisms, where he doesn't quite know the right term for something all the time.
And you're right, he does sometimes just like luck into, he does luck into, like, bumbles into luck. Like, even when the scene where he falls asleep, which I was thinking a lot back to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles at that point, and was thinking that this movie would have been a really good pairing with either that or with Midnight Run last year.
Oh, for sure. Midnight Run would have been perfect, yeah.
And when he falls asleep Healy is like, just take your hands off the wheel, it's fine. Like, look, it drives itself. And you don't realize he's falling asleep. And just like, what is going on? Like, this is so absurd. And then the giant bee shows up at the end. And then they crash the car. And crashing the car is what reveals to them that Tally was gave them, like, put them on this fake mission. With the fake money, with like all of the suitcases just filled with like paper and not with actual things.
And that's sort of the stuff that really reminds me a lot of Big Lebowski in a way that I really appreciate. Like, this movie is paying homage to a lot of the classic genre movies that we've covered, you know, including Big Lebowski and Long Goodbye. And, you know, it's doing a lot of that in a way that I really, really appreciate that. Like, it has the dueling, like, Private Eye narration at the beginning, where you meet both of your titular PIs in the classic tone, and then they kind of get rid of it.
The narration is something that you get in Shane Black movies. You get that in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. You get that in Iron Man 3. And I love how it pays off in Iron Man 3. If you've seen that, you know how the narration pays off. It's very fun. And so we start this movie with the dueling narrations from both of them. And I thought that we were going to have the narration going the whole time. And do we ever go back to the narration again? Besides
at the very, very end. At the very, very end, Gosling comes back. But But I really think that it does a great job setting up both of our characters. And I think that Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling, there's a reason that they wanted to do this with Shane Black. Like, they both read the script, and in like 3 days, Shane Black said it's the fastest that he has ever had a movie go from sending 2 actors a script to both saying yes, and it was in pre-production. 3 days. It was 3 days. There was never any other option than Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling.
I think that they have really good chemistry together.
I think
they play off each other well. And Russell Crowe plays such a straight man to go with Ryan Gosling, where he's like, you're getting glimpses, I feel like, in this movie of the Ken character that he's going to play in Barbie. And I'm sure Barbie is going to be on somebody's list. And this Marsh, like this bimbo kind of bumbling doofus who just like happens into these things. Like, Ryan Gosling is really good at playing that. Even though, I mean, he's like Ryan Gosling. He's this really good looking, like, leading man.
They're both playing on their personas. They're both both playing on their own movie personas up to this point, you know?
Yeah. So,
like, even down to Russell Crowe having the Hawaiian shirt underneath his jacket, like he does in American Gangster.
Oh, interesting. Like, that's good. That's a fun connection. All right. Yeah.
Like, they're playing on their own personas. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is something also, you know, that was a good tie to Devil in a Blue Dress.
Yeah.
But this movie ends and it sets up that, like, you could see the continued adventures of the nice guys. And I'm really surprised we never, I don't know if it was when we get into the box office, we can talk about it, but, like, was the movie just not successful? Why did we never go back to these two characters and see them investigating something else?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that both of them sort of went on their own career paths after this. I mean, Russell Crowe started getting more into his band and had a lot of public issues. A band. Yeah, I believe it's called 40 Odd Footed Grunts.
And, crazy.
Yeah, and then Ryan Gosling skyrocketed around this time into, like,
skyrocketed.
You know, but I mean, he's gonna go on to do La La Land a couple years after this and getting nominated for Oscars, and, you know, he's to the moon. He's not going back to this, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, since then, yeah, he did Blade Runner 2049. Yes, he's done,
which might come up.
Obviously Barbie. Mm-hmm. He did do The Gray Man, First Man, two different man movies. He hasn't really done that much recently, though, since this movie.
I think Barbie is pretty recent, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Barbie obviously was last year. But last year. I feel like in general, he hasn't cranked out as many movies.
But that's also a COVID thing, is there were fewer movies being put into production for the years between 2020 and 2022. So everyone's career sort of slowed down for, you know, 2 years, you know?
Yeah. All right. I guess I can see that. But he does play a character named Protagonist in a movie called Gucci. this is like a short film called Gucci. Okay, yeah, it's a 2-minute film. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's only been 7 years since this came out, so, like, maybe the nice guys come back, although I feel like we've probably passed that point.
Shane Black stated in as late as 2018 that he still intended to revisit these characters and try to do a sequel. It just hasn't come together yet.
So. Mm-hmm. And Shane Black himself, he's only done The Predator in terms of directing, and writing wise, I don't think he's written. He has not written anything. So I don't know what Shane Black has been working on these days.
I'm curious. Yeah.
Let's see. All right. What do you think of, like, the kind of ridiculous twist that this plot takes? Right. We start off before we even get our two lead characters. We get this whole cold open scene with Ty Simpkins playing Bobby, who you might recognize Ty Simpkins as, like, the kid from Iron Man 3.
Yes, Iron Man 3 kid. Yep.
And the car that crashes through his house, and it's Misty Mountains, who's a porn star, naked in the car. And she says, "How do you like my car, big boy?" And then dies.
Yeah, this is the thing, is, like, this is the typical noir plot within a plot that unwraps like an onion, unpeels like an onion thing, where there's this smaller murder that seems to be pretty easy, or smaller event like a murder or an accident that seems pretty easy to explain, that when it starts being investigated balloons into this larger government conspiracy. You know, last week it was the water. This week it's the air. Next week maybe we'll watch a movie where it's fire.
Oh, yeah, Earth, I like that.
Or Earth or heart. You know, what are the planeteers?
By our powers combined, we could have Captain Planet Month.
Captain Planet Month. I'm here for it.
But we also get that with Devil in a Blue Dress too, right? Where the search for the girl. Like, each of these last three movies have started the same way, where it's, we need your help finding the missing girl.
Exactly.
And each has unraveled, you're right, like a bigger government conspiracy, the mayor's race hopefully we're not spoiling the end of these movies for people who have only watched this one. But we had the bigger, larger conspiracy in Devil in a Blue Dress, Chinatown, and now this. I wanted to just, one thing about last week from Chinatown, I had written down on my list, and I thought it would have been a very good movie for us to do this week, and I just completely, like, missed over it on my list for suggestions, but I thought Vertigo would have been a really good one to do in terms of a movie somebody is asked to investigate a mysterious girl, and it unravels this larger conspiracy.
I mean, we could still do it this week. I mean, there's the whole thing with the grandma, with the aunt in this, is she's swearing her niece is alive, and that she saw her through a window. Mm-hmm. You know, and they keep dismissing her until the very end of the movie. Everything comes together of why she saw her niece in the window.
Mm-hmm. And I actually really like the reveal of
like that
film projector coming out of the table, and that like this is just like such a like. You know, you're getting the film industry, right? Like, this is a producer's household. They have a film projector in their house like that.
Right.
The other reason why I wanted to connect Chinatown to Vertigo was because of the PTSD of it all, right? That we get in Chinatown, we get references back to, you know, something that happened in Chinatown. We're never really told what it is, but Jake talks about, like, this happened in Chinatown. Like, there is some PTSD in Chinatown. There's PTSD in Vertigo. So a little amendment to last week's Chinatown discussion.
Yeah. I mean, we've done Hitchcock a couple of times on this pod. I would have loved to have visited Vertigo. We still can someday. It's a movie that isn't my favorite Hitchcock, but I know it's a lot of people's favorite Hitchcock.
It's one that I appreciate the more I watch it. First time I watched it, I was a little underwhelmed, and I like it more and more each time.
Yeah, and I think that I had it built up, and I think I would feel the same if I watched it again, where I would appreciate it more.
Especially knowing where it goes, I think, like knowing what the angles are. To hop back to the Captain Planet thing you just mentioned, I did notice in my notes I have written down Earth, Wind, and Fire, because we get that Earth, Wind, and Fire performance of September at the porn party, which is like the main thing I remembered about this movie. Like, looking back on it, I was like, oh yeah, there's I was thinking the porn party was the climax of this. I forgot the climax of this movie takes place at the hotel.
Yeah.
I had forgotten the auto show.
I had forgotten the final auto show as well, which I was sort of delighted by. I was like, oh yeah, the whole thing really is stupidly about smog and capitalism. Mm-hmm. Like, it's
Yeah. That it all ties back to, and we get it set up early on, right? We see the cars that are parked at the gas station, and there's signs of the gas station that are limits on gas. Now, I wasn't alive at this time, but I've seen that referenced in Licorice Pizza as well, the gas crisis of the 70s.
Connections.
we get that set up, and then we get the protesters talking about the catalytic converter and the smog in LA. That ends up this story ends up intertwining like the porn industry, you know, that Amelia made a porn movie to expose the car industry.
That her mother was responsible for. Like, that's the thing, and that I think that that's really clever. I think the moment that made me laugh the most in this movie is they're out looking for Amelia, and Amelia is part of this protest group that is staging a protest on the city hall steps where everyone is pretending to have died from smog, and they're like saying Amelia, looking for somebody, and one guy pops his head up and he's like, we can't talk, we're dead. And he's like, oh, you were dead? And he's like, yeah, we're dead, we died from smog. And he's like, the mask you're wearing didn't save you? The kid's like, damn it.
You've poked a hole and
the mask didn't save you.
That's true.
Made me laugh so hard. It was really good.
I like that scene too, that they keep asking. They're not respecting these protests, and they think that they're silly.
Who wants to make $20?
And that it's, who wants to make $20, and who is it that wants to make $20? It's Chet that ultimately...
Chet. X-Day on the condescending, Chet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think of Kim Basinger showing up in this? I feel like, you know, we have not done any movies with Kim Basinger.
Yeah.
And Kim Basinger, like, very random actress to show up in this movie.
She pretty much had, like, I mean, she's pretty much retired from Hollywood, you know, as far as on-screen presence goes. She very rarely appears in films anymore. This was sort of, like, her biggest appearance since, that I can recall, since L.A. Confidential, which may come up later. I mean,
yeah, I would imagine
She sort of, you know, retired to, you know, be a mom and do other things. Like, I think that she's that classic noir leading lady of the 1940s and 50s looking female, mm-hmm. where she's got like the flowing blonde locks. And in this, instead of having the classic noir look to her character, they make her the heavy. Mm-hmm. And they sort of brush her hair back from her face and have her in a power suit instead of something classic, you know, classically sexy in noir terms. You know what I mean?
Wouldn't John Boy be the heavy though? Isn't the heavy
I mean the person responsible for it all. Like the main antagonist. I think it's a great play on the classic trope to have the main person responsible for everything be the female character, like the female lead, rather than the some, you know, power hungry dude. You know what I mean?
And the head of the Justice Department as well. Right. That she's the mastermind behind this, and she's part of this government conspiracy to work with the auto industry. What was the auto industry trying to do? Are they just trying to like create cars cheaply and not put catalytic converters on there, basically, and not worry about smog? Is that basically what it is?
Basically, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you know, is this something that actually happened? Did the auto industry actually try to like, was there some controversy around catalytic converters? Because I feel like
The smog in LA has been a thing since the 70s, and it's because of the way the cars were made. Because of the population in large cities like LA and New York, the air quality is shit. And in the last several years, car manufacturers have finally started to develop cars that don't emit as harmful toxic fuels into the air. And I mean, this is the whole thing in the 80s where the whole like we have to fix the hole in the ozone layer because of all the chemicals being put in the air from automobiles. Mm-hmm. And so that one of the ways that the ozone layer got fixed in the late 80s, early 90s was changing the way automobiles were made.
Okay, I think you're going to get corrected on everything you just said, but I don't think
I am. Yeah.
All right. Yes. I mean, I do see like catalytic converters since 1975 in the United States. Mm-hmm. Most cars have been fitted with them. But yes, I don't know if there was like there was some sort of controversy where the catalytic converters didn't work or what exactly. I am not an expert. Despite being from Michigan, I'm not an expert on the auto industry.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly more expensive, and I could understand why a conspiracy would be made into, you know, why a movie conspiracy would develop to keep cars, you know, expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or to keep cars cheap, I mean.
Yeah, keep cars cheap. So, you know, I think, like, we get, throughout this, we get some big set pieces, right? We get the big shootout at March's house, which that house is just, like, so 70s looking. Like, you could see, like, the Brady Bunch living in that house.
Yep.
Does the Brady Bunch take place in the 70s, or did that take place in the 50s?
It takes place in the 50s, but it's filmed in the 70s.
It's made in the 70s. Okay. Yeah. Maybe you could see, like, some 70s, that 70s show taking place in this house.
It might have been set in the 70s. I can't recall. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen the Brady Bunch, dude.
I feel like the Brady Bunch movie might have been set at a different time.
The Brady Bunch movie was set in the 90s, but everybody dressed like they were in the 70s.
That's right. Yes. Okay. Yes. That's very funny. All right. The film set in the present day in the movies. I don't have one. The show is set. Okay. I never watched the Brady Bunch show, but I have seen the movie. But I do love one of the things that I think is very funny in that shootout is that the palm tree gets shot and the palm tree, like the way the palm tree falls, is just, I don't know why. It was just like one of those. And I think the silliness and the unexpected humor in this is, even on a rewatch, is what I really most appreciated. And I thought it was like just so funny that like some of the things that happen, like the bumbling nature of this movie and that palm tree falling, I felt like was like such a good representation of the bumbling nature of this movie.
Yeah, I agree. It's almost like Shane Black didn't tell the actors everything that was going to happen to the sets around them as they were filming this. And then they had to like react in real time. You know what I mean?
I think especially like Ryan Gosling's reaction. He's just I wrote down that he's twitchy. Like he's just he screams and he's twitchy and he's like very jumpy. And always like, it's like, how did this, and he's a detective with no sense of smell. I'm like, how did this guy, and I know that's kind of the joke, but like, how did this guy ever end up in this line of work? And that his daughter is so bright and perceptive, and like, she's able to figure this stuff out. And she's, you know what, like 15 years old on this probably, or 13 years old.
Okay. Yeah.
So
I think they said 13 in the film.
13. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I did see on her bio that she was born in like 2001. So yeah, that would make sense. 13, 14 years old. Yeah. And then we get the big shootout at the auto show. One thing I really liked about that is we get references to Nixon. Like, we get the story about Richard Nixon.
I love the Nixon in the pool bit when he falls in the pool and he thinks he's dying. Yeah.
Yeah. but a subtle nod to Nixon is that the movie is being projected from a hotel room across the way. And it reminded me so much of Watergate. Have like the thing in the hotel room across that is the important, you know, that is like the important part of the inciting incident to like expose this conspiracy.
Good point.
So
it's a good point.
And yeah, I just love like the LA, you know, that's like much like we had in Chinatown, like we're getting a different time period, even though this takes place, you know, around the year. This is 77, Chinatown was 74, so just a couple of years after Chinatown came out. Yeah. But we're getting for the third week in a row, like, L.A. set at a certain time period.
For sure. I'm kind of surprised there wasn't, like, a really good Gerald Ford joke. Because of Ford, the auto manufacturer, and then Ford being president. Like, I'm kind of surprised there's not, like, a really good Gerald Ford joke in here. But
true. Yeah.
Yeah.
They missed that one.
Missed that one.
Yeah. Yeah,
but we got
no. Nixon. I think it's just like sharp writing too.
I think it is too. Yeah, that's what Shane Black does. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's good like action comedy writing, right? Like this is the guy who did Lethal Weapon movies. He did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah.
And I think like his style, it's probably why some people don't like Iron Man 3 because his style is so particular.
It's so different.
That I think like that writing can just be, I think it could be off-putting if you're not like in the mood for it.
Yeah, and that's a movie that I've liked every time I've rewatched it. Like I've liked Iron Man 3 more every time I've watched it.
Yeah.
Not that I watch it all the time, but I've rewatched it a few times.
We need to check it out, yeah. And in true Shane Black fashion, we do end the movie at Christmas, right?
Exactly.
I don't know when that auto show was taking place. Like, I don't know how much longer after this, but we get, you know, we get our two detectives. We get March and Healy. Yeah, our two true detectives sitting at the counter. And they're, and March has made up that poster for their agency, right? The detective agency. Like, you could see them going and having, you know, a whole series of adventures.
Yeah.
The one thing I didn't like was that, like, I feel like Holly, the daughter, gets a little bit short shrift in that last scene. Like, she's so important throughout the movie.
That's right.
And then she's kind of, like, she's in the restaurant, but she should be in that last shot with them. She's kind of like their third wheel. Like, and she should be more featured.
Yeah. Something I didn't realize until right now when I'm looking at the cast list, she's named after him. He's Holland March and she's Holly.
So interesting. I thought
that was interesting. So she's sort of like a junior version of him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. You could see in like the, you know, if this was like Lethal Weapon and they make like the third or the fourth one, like her storyline could continue to develop as she gets older as well.
For sure.
Anything else? We can get to feedback unless there's anything you want to touch on.
I mean, I loved seeing Keith David popped up. We mentioned him earlier. I just love him whenever he pops up in anything. He's in a really brief scene in American Fiction that is really good. So I love Keith David. It's great.
He's got such a great voice. He's just his voice just like makes you like, I don't know. He's got like deep bellowing voice that I so appreciate. Yeah, his presence on screen from nothing else. Bo Knapp, who plays Blueface, I don't know him from anything. Yeah, I've seen some of the movies he's in, but nothing that he sticks out. Hell, he played a guy named John in Southpaw.
Yeah. And then of course Matt Bomer is sort of up and coming that guy. Like he's been in a million things, but I couldn't pick Matt Bomer out unless somebody said that's Matt Bomer, and I'm like, oh, him.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He does have a role in Maestro. So the second Matt Bomer movie that I've watched this week. Okay, Bomer. Nice. So, Bomer. Yeah. And Margaret Qualley, I think, is just like she's, yeah. I think she's like a really nice presence on screen too. I appreciate her. I like that they dress her in yellow throughout the movie. It makes her have this MacGuffin-esque quality to her because like this is the girl they're looking for, and that she's this gold, you know, she's the gold they're looking for essentially. So I do like that. And RIP to Amelia. That's sad.
Terrible death. So. Yeah.
All right.
They could have just not done that and it would have been fine.
Yeah, I just feel like that was I think that's like my main issue with this movie is the first half is so much fun. And then I think after we get back from the porno party,
the like, tone sort of gets worse.
Yeah, I think we get into like, all right, we need to get like the plot now. Like we've gotten all these weird things happening. We need to explain what's going on and like plot this out. And it's sort of similar to Chinatown where it's like, well, when you get like break down the plot, it sort of like it takes a little less of the fun. It takes some of the fun away. Whereas like, what is enjoyable about this movie is just kind of like the hangout vibe,
the detectiving. Yeah. Hanging out with the detectiving. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
And that's like, oh, we need to have like this hitman come and we need to have a tie into the auto industry. And this like, it needs to just be this like crazy web, which I think works a little bit better in Nice Guys because it's not as serious. I mean, Chinatown is just so deadly serious.
Yeah, for sure.
And Nice Guys has more fun with it, but it does lead to some like inconsistencies.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, shall we get into feedback and of course, box office too.
Yeah.
So
do box office mojo.
Yep. All right. Well, box office, it opens at number 4 on May 20th, 2016, and it fell to number 7 the second week. And was out of theaters completely and had its DVD release in August of 2016. Other movies in the theater. So this movie did come out the second week of Captain America Civil War.
Yeah, that's its big competitor for the summer box office, really.
Do you know what the number
Captain
one
America
movie
Civil War took over everything, right?
No, that was number 2. The number 1 movie was the Angry Birds movie.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Remember Angry Birds?
I forgot there was an Angry Birds movie.
I kind of forgot there were 2 Angry Birds movies, right? Isn't there a second one?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. Other movies that came out this week, Neighbors 2. Ooh. Speaking of sequels, I never saw that. I love the first Neighbors.
The first Neighbors. It was fun.
Yep. And then Nice Guys. So Nice Guys came out number 4 that week. Mm-hmm. What did I say? Yeah, number 4. Okay, that is what I said.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I said 2 for some reason. Other movies that were in theaters, Zootopia, Brendan, that you and I saw in theaters together.
Yeah.
Money Monster, you and I saw that movie in theaters.
We saw that movie together. That was a weird one with like, it's George Clooney and Julia Roberts in a film nobody saw. How wild is that?
A movie about, they had that other movie. Didn't they have a rom-com?
Oh, the recent one. Yeah.
But this, Money Monster was Trapped about like Paradise. What is the guy? Like the stock guy, like the bye-bye.
Jim Cramer?
No. Yeah, like a Jim Cramer guy. And then there's a hostage situation.
Yeah. Wild.
Yeah, but nothing else.
Not a particularly good movie.
Nothing else that we've done on this podcast is out in theaters at that time. Deadpool is still out in theaters. Wiener came out that week, but was only in 5 theaters. Nothing that we've done on this podcast. Have we done any other 2016 movies? I'm sure we have, actually, because
We have.
Because 2016 was not one of those years to pop up as our like blind spot years on this podcast. Let's see, 2016, we have done one other film, and it was Hidden Figures is the other movie.
Ah, there you go.
2016.
Good one.
So, all right. Kick things off with Stefan, and he says, thanks for making this week easy for me.
Nice.
I just watched this on American Netflix last week during the holidays. Swedish Netflix isn't as good. This was a movie that I've had on my must-watch list basically since it came out, and I'm glad I finally saw it. It pays homage to all the classics while also becoming a cult classic on its own. The two leads are bringing their A-games and are doing so somewhat against type. Remember, this is pre-Ken. Yep. Andrea Rice seems to be in everything these days, and you can see why. She was great here in her Hollywood debut.
Yep.
In case it comes up next week, I don't want to mention it too much, but there is a lot of meta LA Confidential here, which actually plays well and doesn't come off as cheesy, but Basinger is much better in LA Confidential than she is here. Also, hello, RDJ's dead body against a tree, 4.5 out of 5. Did not realize that was Robert Downey Jr.'s body in this.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was him. Okay.
He's the body double.
He's the body for Stan, what's his name?
Stet something. Yeah, did not. I don't remember what. Yeah, what is it? Let's see. Yeah. No, Sid Shattuck. Uncredited Shattuck. Sid Shattuck played Shattuck. By Robert Downey.
Yeah, it wasn't in the in the credits. Interesting.
You have to go all the way to the bottom of the Letterboxd cast list to see
that's
his
wild.
Name.
Good job, yep. Letterboxd. Sometimes Letterboxd cast list is really with
things. And good job, Stefan, as well.
Yeah, good job, Stefan. Thank you. All right. Our buddy Travis Payne writes in and says, this was a really fun and entertaining watch. The comedic and action elements kept my attention throughout. I liked that despite having Gosling and Crow, this movie did not take itself too seriously. I was impressed with the young Andre Rice, who I thought stole the show. I am surprised this movie never got a sequel, especially given the ending. 4 stars from Travis. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that a little. Shane Black has expressed his desire, at least, 6 years ago, he expressed his desire to do a sequel. We'll see what happens, maybe someday. Yeah.
The nicer guys.
Yeah, or maybe they can do what we talked about with Devil in a Blue Dress, where we get, TV series. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather they just keep doing
movies. Everybody's doing TV now, right?
Yeah, I guess. All right, Megan the Librarian says, this kind of lost me within the first 5 minutes when Misty Mountain's dying body was shown laid out naked, just like she was in her centerfold. Mm. I found it was very much how can we make we can make offensive jokes because this movie is set in the 70s genre. On top of that, I didn't find the jokes funny. Disappointing. 2.5 stars. I do think, it's almost like gratuitous in that first scene where you're seeing Misty Mountains, and they never really explain why she was naked in that scene, except that she's a porno actress.
She was fleeing the fire, right?
Is that what?
She was fleeing the maybe not. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, I guess and I can see how it just kind of if that doesn't strike the right chord with you, it's like that is the opening scene of this movie. And I think I'm this is setting up that it's about the porn industry.
Yeah.
They do definitely use a lot of homophobic slurs in this because it's set in this time period. And there are it's stuff that movies don't get away with, but it's also, I guess like Megan said, it's because it's set in the 70s, you can say that. But I don't know. Yeah. If it's not your tone, it's not your tone. I get it.
Yeah. I mean, I think PTA does the same kind of thing in Boogie Nights, but gets away with it because the tone isn't overall comedic. The tone of Boogie Nights is overall dramatic with some comedic scenes. Mm-hmm. It's not going for the Shane Black version of comedy. And this is,
And for me, I found the offensive stuff, take or leave, but I just thought the overall humor in this movie really worked for me, especially Ryan Gosling stuff.
Yeah, I think so too.
I just think his performance really makes this.
Yeah. And I mean the chemistry with him and Russell Crowe is really off the charts, I think.
Yeah, and so says the AARP.
Yeah. Jenny is a teacher, writes in and says, this was one of those maybe if I rewatch it, I'll like it better movies. It was not. The Nice Guys doesn't know what it wants to be when it grows up. The slapstick doesn't work with the serious plot. They tried something new and it really didn't work. With that said, I was still mostly entertained. 3 stars from Jenny, the music teacher. This is sort of what we've been talking about the whole time is the tonal inconsistency bothers some people. Didn't bother me as much on this watch as maybe it could have if I hadn't seen the movie before. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. For me, a tone is something that's tricky, and it's not something that bothers me that much. It depends on the movie. I'm sure I've complained about tone on other movies. The tone didn't bother me. I think my biggest hang up, and I think that Jenny kind of unlocks that a little bit, is the serious plot. If the plot ended up being something, if you get a movie Keanu, for example, and that the plot or Pineapple Express, right, where it's two bumbling idiots get into a deeper conspiracy, but the overall conspiracy isn't this big automaker, the automakers are polluting and the ramifications of the plot and all the dead bodies, all the innocent people who are killed in this.
Yeah.
It does make it like feel so serious when they're jokey about it.
Thank you for not spoiling Keanu for me. I still have not seen it.
Yeah, I don't even remember what the overall. I don't really remember the ending of Keanu, but I just remember it being like, it is not as grave as the end of this movie is.
Gotcha.
Okay. I mean, like we get a huge shootout at an auto show. Like
it's wild.
That is like pretty. Pretty dramatic, like huge event.
Big
to
stakes.
Happen.
Yeah, I mean it goes. Yeah, big stakes. It goes from being a ridiculous two-hander to suddenly it's like it's going for Beverly Hills Cop, and it doesn't quite get there. You know what I mean? Okay. As far as the right balance of tones from the hilarity of Axel Foley to actually taking his work seriously.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also like the innocent people who suffer in this, right? Like, Rush Hour or Beverly Hills Cop, like, they do uncover, like, a bigger conspiracy, but it is just, like, bad guys against the cops or bad guys against the detectives. Not people that are, and, you know, again, it's been a while since I've seen any of those movies, but, like, a big shooting at
Bronson Pinchot isn't getting shot in the face in Beverly Hills Cop 2, you know?
Okay. Maybe. I don't know. Yep. All right. Jim. Jim Crumley says, I had no idea what I was getting into with Nice Guys, and even after watching it, I'm not sure what I got. One thing I take away from the movie is watch out if you come across a Chet. 3 out of 5.
That's fair.
Yeah. Very anti-Chet these days. Yep. Yeah. No Chets are good.
No Chets are good. Yeah. What about Chetsers?
Chesters are okay. Not Chetsers, though.
All right. Robbie writes in and says, this is a comfort movie for me. At least once a year, I'll sit down and watch this movie. I enjoy the buddy cop style of movie, and it's even better when it's two great actors like Crowe and Gosling. I wish every year had a buddy cop movie or two in the realm with high-class actors like this. 4 stars from Robbie. So there you go.
No, I think it's a fun movie. Interesting. Robbie watches it once a year. I would turn this on. I think it's a fun one if you just like had people over and you wanted to throw something like kind of fun on.
It's interesting. We keep calling this a detective movie and a buddy cop movie. It's not really buddy cop movie. I mean, they're not cops. Like, no, I guess Russell Crowe is a former Detroit police officer, but I mean, they're private investigators, which is very different. But they basically act like cops.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Well, Ron says, this was quite a fun ride. They did a fairly good job of tying in the Marsh family tragedy into the tale. Mm-hmm. 4 stars.
Yep. There you go.
So, yep. All right. And then you can close
the door. And then your brother writes in and says, I like this movie more and more each time each watch. So well written, and the chemistry is top notch. 4.5 for your brother Aaron. So that's going to give us a overall listener average of 3.81.
All right.
So not too bad. Not too bad at all for our fifth movie of the year. I thought I was going to come out of this and into this being a little higher than I actually am, but I still think this is an incredibly fun movie. It's incredibly watchable, to coin a phrase from another podcast. But I think this is a solid 4, like 4-star movie. Like this is, I don't think it quite reaches the heights that it did for me in the theaters the first time I saw it, where I believe I came out of that and said, that's my favorite movie of the year, period. It wound up number 4 for me for the year of 2016 when I looked at my ranking.
2016 is a really good year, so that's pretty high. Yeah.
So, I'm gonna stick with the 4 for where I have it in my rankings.
Nice. All right. Coming into this podcast, I thought I was going to be 4.5 on this movie. Mm-hmm. And as we've talked about, especially the second half, and just kind of like the second half of this movie just doesn't work as well as the first half. Like, the first half is so fun, and if the movie was just like culminated in the party at the porn house in LA, like, I think I would like it better, but I'm gonna just dock a little bit for just kind of like the stuff we've talked about. The plot, like the same thing kind of I talked about with Chinatown, that like the plot,
yeah, I agree,
you know, it's these plots can get overly twisty in order to make it twisty. And I think also, like, by the end of this movie I was starting to feel the runtime too. Like, I think this would be better if it was about an hour and a half, a maybe tighter. An hour and 40.
Yeah.
You know, just shave about 10 minutes off. Like, I was just starting to feel it towards the end. So I'm going to give it a 4 as well.
Nice. All right, and that is going to be a 3.94 overall for this movie, and that's going to be a straight four down the line. So there you go.
All right, cool. All right. Hero of the movie. Brendan, who's your hero of the movie?
Geez, it's hard. I mean, it's hard to not give it to one of Gosling or Crow. I think actually, though, kind of want to give it to... kind of want to give it to Holly. I think I got to give it to Holly. Good. I think she's the best detective out of the three. And she's probably the best actor in the film, or giving the best performance, I think, of the three leads. I'm going to give it to Holly. Yeah.
All right. Nice. I got to give it to Ryan Gosling. His performance just really, like, he cracks me up. Like, his physical comedy is really good. You talked about really the scene where he's in the bathroom. Where he's like in the bathroom stall and like he's trying to pull up his pants and like cover himself and open the door, and just like he's just so good at that physical comedy. And I do think, like, you know, he's nominated for a similar performance to what he gives in this. And I had this as my one last thing, but I'm just gonna like talk about it now since I'm talking about the Holland March character, that I love that because his hand is broken, which is like, that also is like pretty high stakes, that the first time that these that he and March are together,
his whole arm.
Yeah, like he breaks his arm, like that's pretty painful looking. Yeah. But I love that he's got this giant cast on, and then if you notice, every time he's wearing a jacket in this movie, the jacket is cut up the sleeve so it can fit around fit around the cast. And I just thought like that was just like a fun touch. Like nobody ever points that out. It's just like a character thing that like he has to cut his jacket all the time in order.
I had to do that to a couple of shirts when I broke my wrist back in 2013, I needed, because it was January, and I needed long sleeve shirts that would fit right over my cast. So
And I really like his performance when he is asleep and he falls asleep driving. Yes. And just like the like, oh, all right, I can just take my hands off the wheel.
The
like
giant bee in the back. It was so funny.
I didn't understand the giant bee, because we do get the bee later on in the movie. I think when they're in the diner, that bee shows up again. Yeah. I don't know what that was about, because that's never really set up.
There was a joke about bees earlier, and I don't remember what it is. There is a setup for that where they're talking about bees.
Was it the protesters who talk about bees, maybe?
No. Yeah, the bees are dying. Yeah, he's like, the bees are dying because of the smog. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the birds are dying. Yeah.
Okay.
The birds and the bees are dying. Yeah.
Yeah. So, just take your hand off the wheel. It's fine.
Done. There you go. What else, Zach?
What else? We got to get into some connections now. So, connections to last week, of course, we've got we've got L.A. detective story, time period piece.
Uses of pools or flowing water. Holland has no sense of smell. Nicholson's nose gets cut.
His nose? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nosy noses.
Nosy noses. Yeah. I also wrote down back of a limo. So we do get the scene in the back of the limo where Amelia, I think, is Amelia, or is it? It's Holly. Holly in the back of the limo with one of the villains of the movie. And we had the back of the limo with the. I guess that was actually the back of the limo was 2 weeks ago, though. That was Devil in a Blue Dress, wasn't it?
That was Devil in a Blue Dress. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a connection to it. But I also wrote down, like, and, you know, this is like, we had the whole thing about the underage girls at the porno party, like, just, inappropriate things with underage women.
And we also had the strained mother-daughter relationship, which luckily, it would have been, luckily they didn't try to redo the whole Chinatown twist where Amelia ends up being Kim Basinger's mother and her daughter,
True. Yeah. We do get like that. She, that Amelia's mom asks the detectives to try to find, like, she's the one who puts them on the hunt for the daughter. Exactly. Yeah. So we are getting, that detective would like find the missing girl. Did you have a title connection in mind?
Not specifically. It needed to be something in LA. Maybe the air in LA or smelling LA, because they're both noses. Mm-hmm. We have the whole two things with noses.
I was thinking just LA story. I don't know. Is that too
LA nose war? LA nose war.
All right, there you go, Brendan.
Yeah,
that we were doing. Even though this we've referred to this as a noir, but this movie is not a film noir at all. It's a detective story.
Yeah, I mean it is a noir. It's playing on all of the noir tropes. It is.
Yeah, but you're not getting like the smoky.
It's a neo noir. Inherent Vice is a noir.
I don't think we said Inherent Vice was a noir.
It is. It's a neo-noir.
Right.
We did it after doing The Long Goodbye.
We did. I mean, you're right. I think it's just like a detective story. But yeah, I don't think this qualifies as a noir, though.
Okay, write in and tell us who's right. And yeah, I can't wait for everybody to say Brendan is right.
Yeah, that's I hope you were right. But I'm fine with LA Noir. I think that's a funny pun. Good job.
A little hat on a hat, but it's on a nose, but it's
fine. There you go. A bandage on a nose. All right, what do you got for connections to other movies from this year?
Lots of excessive drinking, as we have in every movie. Smoking inside buildings, which we have.
I mean, you're skipping over Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe and American
Gangster. Well, you got to start big and go, Brendan. You got to start big and go small. Yeah.
Well, I don't start big.
My man. You got to start big.
Russell Crowe, obviously, an American Gangster. And we talked about, I talked about earlier how he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt underneath his jacket in American Gangster. And again, in this movie, it's a look for Crowe.
We've kind of built this like outside pyramid where we went Nicholson. Nicholson, and then a couple movies later we went to Chinatown, and then we went Denzel to Denzel back to back, but then Russell Crowe, and then Russell Crowe a couple out. I mean, so like, I think if we follow that pattern, we should
we're sort of doing one of those spirally circles where
that's exactly a grid
pattern. Yeah.
A spiral where everything's connected. Where have I heard that before? all right. Well, other movies that this has come up, this has been suggested off. So, of course, I suggested this off Chinatown last week, so a point for me. But, Brendan, Jeff suggested this off of Fracture back on episode 125 for Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, the Gosling connection. Nice.
And the only other time this came up, you suggested it off The Long Goodbye, which we ended up doing Inherent Vice instead. So I suggested Inherent Vice. You suggested Nice Guys. Went with Inherent Vice. But,
makes sense.
Yeah, I do feel like especially, and maybe we can get to Movie Map, like for Movie Map, for me, I was thinking, and I brought this up earlier, but Midnight Run. I just think that like odd couple comedy, action comedy, where like this in Midnight Run, we talked about there was the big shootout in Midnight Run and how it felt like kind of tonally weird with like how high stakes it was for a comedy.
There's a larger conspiracy to everything. American Hustle does the same thing as well. You know, where it's, you know, Bradley Cooper and Christian Bale are unlikely allies with Jennifer Lawrence and Amy Adams in the middle. Mm-hmm. So that I also thought of was American Hustle, set around the same time period in the 70s.
Nice. All right. And I guess all the Nixon stuff, too. You could talk about All the President's Men.
Yeah, also true.
All right. Any other connections to this? I kind of skipped over. Any other connections to any other movies from this year?
Nothing that I have written down. Nothing that's really come up off the top of my head as we were talking.
Nice. Yeah, I mentioned it earlier, but starting an agency at the end ties to Devil in a Blue Dress. And then opening the movie with narration ties to both Devil in a Blue Dress and Chinatown. And Departed, I think.
And Departed.
Oh, yep. Did we have narration in American Gangster? We could have had every movie.
No, we had opening crawl though. We had crawls. Yeah.
Oh, nice. All right.
We had title cards. Yeah.
One last thing.
Do I have one last thing? I kind of burned it all with.
Like the house.
Yeah, I don't really have one last thing. I think I burned all my one last things with the. All right. With the shame of it all with the AARP awards.
So when we're getting the setup early in the movie. We get like the radio, I think it's like the radio DJ is talking about the smog alert. We're showing LA, and I do love like how much LA we get, right? We get I've been to LA a lot. I really like it. But what I love is that we see the Comedy Store, and the Comedy Store is a fantastic comedy club in LA on Hollywood Boulevard. If you're ever in LA, go to the Comedy Store. It's very fun. You buy a ticket for the night, and they have like 10 or so comedians that come up there and give like 10 to 12 minute sets, and you'll see like some really famous comedians that come up, and it's just like bang, bang, bang. You're not sitting there for an hour listening to the same comedian, but you listen to Dave Attell, there. And, the guy, Roastmaster, Jeff Ross, I saw there. I saw, Adam Carolla there once upon a time, Bob Saget. We saw it's one of the places I always go when I visit LA. So if you're ever in LA, definitely check out the Comedy Store. It's a lot of fun.
And I think Russell Crowe's character lives above the Comedy Store, right? Is that?
I think Holland lives a couple, like a street down, I believe.
No, Russell Crowe's character. Doesn't he go into the Comedy Store and then upstairs, and they're like, this area is off limits.
Oh, maybe. I didn't even pay attention to that.
If when he fights when he fights Keith David for the first time.
I didn't realize he was at the Comedy Store.
I thought he walked through the Comedy Store into the back with the case of Yoo-Hoo, which I loved as a gift.
Yeah, he did have the Yoo-Hoo. I did notice the Comedy Store. I was looking at the marquee. Maybe that's why I didn't notice that the marquee says Tim Allen was performing, as well as Richard Lewis.
Oh wow, Richard Lewis.
As Curb Your Enthusiasm is coming back this weekend, we've got Richard Lewis showing up on the movie.
I do love a Yoo-Hoo. Speaking of
Yoo-Hoo's, I don't think I've ever had a Yoo-Hoo.
You've never had a Yoo-Hoo, dude? Oh man, nope. Bottled chocolate milk.
I was never like a big milk. I was never a big milk person growing up.
We were big even milk chocolate kids. Milk kids growing up. Yeah.
All right. I also love like all the bowling alley stuff too. That felt very 70s.
Especially like birthday parties in a bowling alley when they're doing like the cake and the presents and everything. And yeah, it's big. Yeah.
And poor Janet is always on the short end of the stick. Jessica, Janet. Poor
whatever
Janet.
Her name is. Yeah.
The actress who plays Janet was only in this movie. She's just like shit on in this movie.
Oh my goodness.
By Holland.
That poor kid. So, all right. Well,
speaking of being shit on, shall we see what we're going to be watching next week? What we were going to make our listeners watch next week?
That was not a good transition.
No,
sure.
It was not. All right. Well, once we do pick our movie for next week, send in your feedback at Ladder Movie on Letterboxd or on Instagram and Twitter, themovieladder@gmail.com. Of course, check out Letterboxd, the movie ladder, to see all the movies that have been suggested over the four plus years of this podcast. And you can see that watch list to see all the movies. You also can see all the movies that we've watched. If you're worried about suggesting a movie you've already done, follow the movie ladder on Letterboxd. And then when you look at the movie, if you look the movie up, you'll see that we've already logged it, which means that we've already done that movie.
Follow the movie, Lebowski.
All right. Stefan kicks us off and says L.A. Confidential. Yeah, I feel like L.A. Confidential is going to be our number one contender tonight. L.A., crime, Russell Crowe, Kim Basinger, noir, porn, plus more. Plus more is doing a lot of work there. Next one, still in L.A., La La Land, L.A. And Ryan Gosling. And finally, Crash, L.A. and Keith David.
Yep, there you go.
I did not remember
La La Land, blue suit and a yellow dress. So there you go.
Yep, here we go. We have a very colorful movie, La La Land. So, and we're getting those LA landmarks in La La Land too. Travis Payne says, my joke suggestion is Pocahontas for the party guest costume. I didn't notice Pocahontas. I obviously noticed Pinocchio because that was my opening line. Didn't notice that. But Travis says, my actual suggestion is Drive. Ryan Gosling driving 70s cars in LA.
There you go.
Yes.
Yeah, the Pocahontas bit came up when he's at the porn party and he's pretending to have a shootout with the Pocahontas.
Oh, right. Yes.
Dressed lady. And then he falls off the back of the thing.
He falls off the, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I forgot that she was dressed like Pocahontas.
And
the cars, we didn't talk at all about the cars, but for a movie that ends up being about cars at the end. I think like there are some really cool cars. And, like you see like so those too. Cool 70s cars, like they drive cool 70s cars and there's like a 70s Mustang that drives past them. Like it is a very good car movie. Drive is a good suggestion. All right. Robbie has L.A. Confidential, Russell Crowe in L.A., La La Land, Ryan Gosling in L.A.
There you go. Boom.
We're seeing a lot of patterns tonight. Jim Crumley says, why not stick with another California crime story featuring Russell Crowe and Kim Basinger, L.A. Confidential? The movie also shares a soundtrack performer and a painter.
A painter.
L.A. painter. Yeah.
Like it.
Megan the Librarian has Hollywood Homicide, a bad L.A. set law enforcement film pairing an older male star and a younger male star.
Yep.
Is that Josh Hartnett and Robert De Niro?
Harrison Ford.
Oh, Harrison Ford. That's right.
Yes. Yep.
Inspector Gadget, a smart young girl covers for her older male relative's total incompetence.
Yep, there you go.
And then, stop me if you've heard this one before, L.A. Confidential.
Nope.
A much better L.A. set crime film starring Russell Crowe and Kim Basinger.
There you go.
Ron has The Gentleman, and manly in the title.
I like The Gentleman. The Gentleman's fun.
Is that Guy Ritchie,
Gentleman? Yes, Guy Ritchie, okay.
Great. Kiss, Bang, Bang.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, of course, that's Shane Black, also Private Eye and Actors in L.A.
Yep.
And then L.A. Confidential, Crone and neo-noir set in earlier time in L.A. Those were all Ron's suggestions. I might have said Jenny. Jenny's suggestion is, from here, go to Black Klansman, a true story that mixes comedy and reality much better.
And I Black believe, Klansman, is that LAPD as well, or is that Black Klansman L.A., or is that Detroit?
I don't think it's Detroit. I want to say San Francisco, though.
Oh, it might be San Francisco. Okay. I thought it was LA for some reason.
Let's see. Black Klansman
It's Spike Lee, right?
It is Spike Lee. Oh, it's Colorado Springs.
Oh, okay. I didn't have that on the board at all. Okay.
Yeah, it's Colorado.
Cool, cool. Okay. Okay. And then your brother.
And Aaron Brooks has Drive, my favorite Ryan Gosling movie, and The Bad Guys, underappreciated animated movie.
Yeah.
I think that's just a title connection. I don't think there's any cast or anything connection.
Okay.
So. All right. Great.
I get to go first this week. So yep. I did have a theme I was going to go for at least a couple of my picks. Nobody said The Other Guys, and I thought we could go from The Nice Guys to The Other Guys.
Is that Wahlberg?
We could circle back to Wahlberg.
Mm-hmm, yep, circling back. That could be our theme this year.
Yep. And we did Nice Guys. What about Good Boys?
Oh, have you seen Good Boys?
I have seen Good Boys, yeah. Oh,
okay. Well, if you thought The Nice Guys was raunchy humor, just wait till The Good Boys. Yeah. Although there is a character who has a fantastic scream in The Good Boys. So that would be a good connection. You know actually. That. Very nice.
Mm-hmm. We could also do, we could go from Nice Guys to Bad Boys.
Yep. The original Bad Boys. We are getting Bad Boys. Yeah, Will Smith. We are getting Bad Boys 4 this year.
Yes.
As well.
The other one I thought, nobody said Barbie yet, so I'll throw Barbie in.
Yeah.
Did anybody say Blade Runner 2049 yet? No.
Nope.
So I will say Blade Runner 2049. And you know what? Why not do 6 this week? Let's close it out with the PTA I mentioned. You mentioned it. I mentioned it. Licorice Pizza.
Yeah. Okay. I thought you were going to say Inherent Vice and we were going to have first host resuggestion.
No.
Yeah.
Licorice Pizza. I would not be so.
Do we get an auto show in Licorice Pizza? I remember we get like a. Yes. Some sort of
he does commercials.
Right, he does the commercials.
One of the commercials he does is for an auto car salesman. Yeah.
All right. Of course, I had LA Confidential on my list, so I will leave that one off. I had Barbie on my list. I will leave that one off. I will suggest it again, a Russell Crowe period piece. We are getting a sequel later this year. That is Gladiator. Yep.
Of course. Were you not entertained by The Nice Guys?
We could be entertained 2 weeks in a row. Next one, Russell Crowe takes down the man, unveils the conspiracy in The Insider. Wow. There was another podcast that covered The Insider today, but
yeah, I saw that list
beforehand.
Michael Mann.
The ultimate Russell Crowe period piece, that is Noah. Going back to biblical times.
Say Noah to Noah.
Film Noah can be our title connection next week. If you want,
this is all my fault. I set us up for this. This is all my fault.
let's see. Next one. All right, so we've done a lot of Russell Crowe. Let's do a Ryan Gosling period piece. Yeah. First Man.
Nice.
Where he is the first man on the moon.
First Man. Yep.
Yeah, First Man. Exactly. Let's go with Shady Government Conspiracy, starring Ryan Gosling. We mentioned George Clooney earlier. He directs this movie. That is The Ides of March.
Yes. Also came up on a podcast I was listening to today because of the Philip Seymour Hoffman performance.
Okay. And this is one that I have not seen since the days of 2-for-1 videos at Video One, but it's one I used to rent all the time. And it stars Kim Basinger, and it stars A. Kilmer, but it stars Val Kilmer. And that is The Real McCoy, where she plays a bank robber who gets out of prison and then has one last job.
That is an HBO classic. I love it. Yeah. Yes. That is a video store classic, HBO classic. I love that. Good job, Zach. That's a fun 6. All right, let's see what everybody
has. I feel like Real McCoy is, I don't know where that is for me, but I bet it's like on Tubi or one of those like free, those free ads.
It's on Crackle. It's on Crackle.
Yeah, Crackle. Something like that.
Yeah.
All right. Read what we got. Let's pick.
All right. L.A. Confidential. La La Land. Crash. Drive. L.A. Confidential.
I don't think you need to read L.A. Confidential every time.
La La Land. L.A. Confidential. Hollywood Homicide. Inspector Gadget. Laka. The Gentleman. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. The One You Know. Black Klansman. Drive. The Bad Guys. The Other Guys. Good Boys. Bad Boys. Barbie, Blade Runner 2049, Licorice Pizza, Gladiator, Insider, Noah, First Man, The Ides of March, and The Real McCoy. Zach, you get to go first this week.
All right. I need to go first this week. I just realized I looked up The Nice Guys when I was looking for movies when this came up. So this also came up off of Inherent Vice, but it just had Nice Guys without the. And that was suggested by Jeff, just to complete the process. And then off of The Notebook, Jeff suggested it off of The Notebook as well. So Jeff really wanted us to watch this movie, and I don't think Jeff listened to this
podcast. I hope Jeff listens to this. I
don't think he did. But, you know, never know. All right, I get to pick. I mean, have we ever had a movie suggested this many times?
And not picked it?
I mean, just have we ever had a movie that's been this many?
No.
I have to put Confidential on the list. Because,
that makes sense.
I feel like it's like almost should get like a bye to the finals. If a movie is suggested five times, what did we get it? We got it two, three, four, five. Plus it was on my list as well.
And mine, because obviously.
Okay. Yeah. Yep, I like Confidential.
And I have to pick the second runner up. I think I have to go with Drive because that was what I thought about as well. Mm-hmm. I will go with Drive from the list of picks. I liked Drive. I think I would like it even more on a rewatch.
Yeah. Tied with LA Confidential for two suggestions.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, though. I would have thought Inspector Gadget would have been fun. I've never seen the Inspector Gadget with Matthew Broderick.
Who plays Penny in that?
I don't remember.
No idea. Okay.
Cool. All right. Off of your list, I think I'm going to go with Other Guys only because I've never seen Other Guys. And I do like the idea of circling back to Matt Damon. Yep.
No, Peacock, you got to let me fly on this one. Mm-hmm. Right. For your pick, just the joke of picking Noah is like really high up there for me.
And I would assume that Noah is probably a blind spot for both of us, right?
I have never seen Noah. I know it's a. Is it a Roland Emmerich? Who didn't know?
No, it's
Aronofsky.
Yes.
Aronofsky, right? Yeah, Aronofsky.
Aronofsky, yes.
Aronofsky.
Yes, Darren Aronofsky. Darren Aronofsky, thank you.
Gladiator feels like a big one too, though. No, you know what?
You got the sequel coming up.
I'm gonna go for the joke, and I'm gonna say Noah. No, neither of us have seen it. It's a blind spot. I need one on here that's a blind spot for both of us. So our final four are LA Confidential, Drive, also Noah, Significant Water. And there's Significant Water.
Yes. Oh, there you go. Yep. Significant Water.
And the week before. So Water Month. LA Confidential.
I was going to say we could do, if we're projecting our ladder out, Darren Aronofsky in something that involves Significant Water, we could be watching The Whale in 2 weeks.
Indeed. PyCon. So our final four are LA Confidential, Drive, The Other Guys, and Noah.
LA Confidential is streaming somewhere, so you can guess that one.
Probably Netflix.
Good job. Also, it's on Plex, it looks like, as well. Got it. So cool. Free streaming.
Drive, I hope, is on Max.
Nope, it is rentable only.
I was going to make the Maximum Overdrive joke.
Oh, there you go. Nicholas Winding Refn is the director of Drive. Other Guys is streaming somewhere.
Netflix again.
Yep, that is very much a Netflix movie. Yep,
this is very much a Netflix movie.
Noah is streaming on a smaller service.
Canopy.
Hoopla. Close. You're the other Hoopla. One. Hoopla. It's also on Paramount Plus on Apple TV. Also, it looks like it's on Pluto TV as well.
Okay, great. Honestly, I think that tone-wise, I would go either LA Confidential or The Other Guys. The Other Guys is just, like, one of my favorite comedies of the last, like...
Really?
20 years, yeah. It's really funny. It's just really funny. There are certain scenes from that movie, if we pick The Other Guys, that, like, literally, like, at least once or twice a year, I get the whim to just YouTube and watch.
Okay, interesting. All right, well, I feel like you're selling this.
It's one of my favorite movies. But I also love LA Confidential, and I would, like, that is a much more serious movie, obviously. I mean, Oscar noms, great actors, great conspiracy, but I do think it's a little too samey to the stuff we've been doing the last three months.
It does feel like we're in, like, we've done, like, crime, cops-ish and crime. I mean, Departed, American Gangster, Devil in Blue Dress, and Chinatown. It's like every movie this year has been that same.
And the other guy, like,
Confidential would be a good one to get at some point. You know, we have very easy connection section. I would like to watch it at some. I haven't seen it in a long time. So all right. I'm fine with the other guys.
I think it would be really fun. It's another dynamic duo. It's also a movie that is playing on the tropes of the buddy cop movie. Like, mm-hmm. this one is playing on the tropes of the noir movie. The other guys plays on the buddy cop tropes that we were talking about throughout this. Yeah. So
it looks like a lot of our listeners have already seen the other guys, but that's okay. Let's watch the other guys. I'll find out what this is about.
Let's have fun.
All right. Yeah. Other guys. Okay, cool. Adam McKay directed. Yeah. Yes. Adam McKay directed The Other Guys 2010, starring Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg. So another cast member from Barbie showing up in this movie with Will Ferrell.
There you go.
And looks like just looking at the castles, there's a lot of different ways that we can go in 2 weeks.
Yep.
So Indeed. The other guys coming up next week's from the nice guys to the other guys.
Yeah, don't look too far down that cast list.
I already did, but I'll forget it by next week. blame the letterbox.
True.
It is on Netflix, the other guys.
Nice. And looking forward to it.
Coming to you next week to talk about it.
Yep.
Brendan, what did you have on your also-rans? Anything you want to mention?
Anything I want to mention? Most of them were taken by other people. Let's see. I did think about The Man from U.N.C.L.E. for another dynamic duo. Let's see. What else? Not too much else. To Live and Die in L.A., I thought would be an interesting way to close out sort of hanging out in L.A. for 4 straight weeks. Mm-hmm.
For a month, yeah.
Yeah, L.A. Story. Escape from L.A. as well.
Oh, there you go. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I had The Predator, which is the Shane Black Predator movie that I've never seen.
Never seen
Body of Lies, Roadhouse, because Keith David is in that, and there's a Roadhouse remake, and I've never seen Roadhouse. Jaws 2 or Airport 77, which were both billboards in this movie.
Very
no cool. Sudden Moves, just because some of the ties to Detroit and one I wanted to revisit. And then one I think probably could have been on the list is Rush Hour as well.
Yes, definitely.
Could be on a list next week, I guess, as well.
Could be.
Yep. All right. Well, from the nice guys to the other guys.
Yep.
What are we going to call this title connection?
Other nice guys. Other nice guys.
From nice to other or something like that. The man from other. Maybe
the man from other.
All right. What are you looking forward to watching this week?
What am I looking forward to watching this week? I have no idea, man. I always forget to plan this segment ahead of time.
Oh, yeah. All right. That's okay. If you don't have anything,
for the Library Ladder Challenge, finally getting back to that. It's MGM musical time on the Library Ladder Challenge. I'll finally be watching a film that I'm sure people will be shocked to discover I have not seen, the magical musical Brigadoon. Where two men get transported to a magical land called Brigadoon that is filled with music and song and romance. I'm very looking forward to finally watching Brigadoon. I've seen the stage version, but I've never seen the movie musical. So looking forward to that.
Nice. I still need to finish my second January Library Ladder Challenge. And I also need to watch something for the monthly challenge as well. So I need to watch The Imitation Game, I think, is what I'm going to watch for A-plus cinema score for Library Ladder. And for the monthly movie challenge, I have to watch something with what is her name? Parker Posey.
Yes.
And so I think I'm going to watch A Mighty Wind, which is one of the Christopher Guest movies I haven't
Love
seen.
Love A Mighty Wind. And then I'll also be checking out the David Lynch film Inland Empire for this week's criteria, which I'm very excited about. That's been on my list forever. So.
Nice. Cool.
There you go.
All right. And we will both be back next week to talk about the other guys.
Or there will be two other guys here instead of us, you know.
Oh, that would be a good bit. So we'll find out this week. This week we found out who was the Russell Crowe and who was the Ryan Gosling.
Yep.
Next week we find out who's the Will Ferrell and who's the Mark Wahlberg. Catch that on Netflix.
We're going to be together forever, Zach.
There we go. Let's say hi to your mother for me. And we'll catch you next week for the other guys. A new one for me. I think
I think that
these have all been rewatches for me so far this year.
Yeah, so. I think that's more exciting than revisiting LA Confidential, you know. I mean, I've just seen it so many times and it's like it's too samey. It was too samey. So I'm excited to watch something you haven't seen.
Mm-hmm. Good. Right. That'll be fun.
Yes.
All right. Well, we got some reviews. David Sims, this is what I meant to bring up. He says this film has the single greatest spit take I've ever seen.
Yes.
Remember the spit take?
Love the spit take.
Just randomly when Healy's wife says that she was sleeping with his dad.
Yeah, and I also love when Holly tries to throw hot coffee on the other lady, and she's like, did you just try to throw cold coffee on me? She's like, well, I thought it'd be hot. And then she slips in the coffee. Yeah. It's like, yay, we're back to the tone. That's great.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yep. That does get us back to that tone too.
It was really funny. Yeah. It's a good job of getting that back.
There were a lot of comments about the Ryan Gosling scream. Every time Ryan Gosling made a high pitched noise. Now this is cinema. Muriel says he was questioning the mermaids. Yeah, how did the mermaids work? I was wondering that during the...
I mean, there are lots of places that have mermaids like that. They swim around for as long as they can, and then they go get air.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. That would be hard. I don't think I could do that.
I mean, you know, they come up for air. They're not like, you know...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Patrick Willem says he just quotes the porno young lady, which I did have that written down in my in my notes, the porno young lady. So... Yeah, and then somebody else says fun Gosling is better than serious Gosling. So,
this is very true.
That is true. Well, next week we're gonna have fun Will Ferrell. I like Will Ferrell usually, but sometimes I feel like my mileage for Will Ferrell varies. So we will see how. I think that's why I never saw the other guys in the first place, is because I never know about Will Ferrell. But it is nice that we're coming back around to we are doing this spiral thing where we're coming back around to Mark Wahlberg.
I think that's great. Yeah.
Excited for that.